The taxman's expression didn't change for a few seconds, and then it flowed into a horrified grin. "I think some breakfast is called for before we go any further," said Mr. Savaloy. "Mr. Wins, perhaps you would be so good as to summon someone?" The taxman was still grinning fixedly.
But you can't conquer an empire like this," he managed. "You've got to have an army, like the warlords. Just walking in like this, it's against the rules, and there are thousands of guards."
"Yes, but they are all out there," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Guarding us," said Cohen.
"But they're guarding the real emperor."
"That's me," said Cohen.
"Oh, yeah?" said Truckle. "Who died and made you emperor?"
"No one has to die," said Mr. Savaloy. "It's called usurping."
"That's right," said Cohen. "You just say, 'See ya, Gunga Din, you're out on your ear, OK? Piss off to some island somewhere, or—"
"Genghis," Mr. Savaloy said gently, "do you think you could refrain from referring to foreigners in that rather offensive fashion? It's not civilised."
Cohen shrugged.
"You're still going to have big trouble with the guards and things," said Six Beneficent Winds.
"Maybe not," said Cohen. "Tell 'em, Teach.
Have you ever seen the, former emperor?" said Mr. Savaloy. "Mr. Winds?" "Of course not. Hardly anyone has seen—"
He stopped.
"There you are, then," said Mr. Savaloy. "Very quick on the uptake, Mr. Winds, as befits the Lord High Chief Tax Gatherer." "But it won't work because—"
Six Beneficent Winds stopped again. Mr. Savaloy's words reached his brain.
"Lord High Chief? Me? The black hat with the ruby red button?"
"Yes."
"And a feather in it, if you like," said Cohen, munificently. The taxman looked in rapt consideration.
"So, if there was, say, a mere district administrator who was incredibly cruel to his staff, particularly to a hard-working deputy and thoroughly deserving of a good, sound thrashing—"
"As the Lord High Chief Tax Gatherer, of course, that would be entirely your affair." Six Beneficent Winds' grin now threatened to remove the top of his head.
"On the subject of new taxation," he said, "I've often had this thought that fresh air is all too readily available at far below the cost of production."
"We will listen to your ideas with extreme interest," said Mr. Savaloy. "In the meantime, please arrange breakfast."
"And have summoned," said Cohen, "all those buggers who think they know what the Emperor looks like."
The pursuer was closing. Rincewind skidded around a corner, and there, blocking the passageway, were three guards. These were not dead. They were alive, and they had got swords. Someone cannoned into the back of him, pushing him to the ground, and leapt past. He shut his eyes. There were a couple of thumps, a groan, and then a very strange metallic noise. It was a helmet spinning round and round on the floor. He was pulled to his feet.
"Are you going to lie around all day?" said Butterfly. "Come on, they're not far behind."
Rincewind glanced at the recumbent guards and then loped after the girl.
"How many of them are there?" he managed.
7 now, but 2 of them are limping and 1's having trouble breathing. Come on."
"You hit them?
Do you always waste breath like this?"
"Never found anyone who could keep up with me before."
They turned a corner and almost ran into another guard. Butterfly didn't even stop. She took a ladylike step, whirled around on 1 foot, and kicked the man so hard on his ear that he spun around on his own axis and landed on his head. She paused, panted, and tucked her hair back into place.
"We should split up," she said.
"Oh, no," said Rincewind. "I mean, I must protect you."
"I'll head back to the others. You lead the guards away somewhere."
"Can you all do that?"
"Of course," said Butterfly testily. "I told you we fought the guards. Now, if we split up, one of us is bound to escape. The murderers, we were supposed to take the blame for that."
Didn't I try and tell you? I thought you wanted him dead.
Yes, but we're rebels. They were palace guards. No time. See you in heaven.
She darted away.
Oh.
Rincewind looked around. It had all gone quiet. Guards appeared at the end of the corridor, but cautiously, as befitted people who'd just met Butterfly.
There! Is it her? No, it's him! Get him!
He accelerated again, rounded a corner, and found that he was in a cul-de-sac that would undoubtedly, given the sounds behind, become a dead end. But there was a pair of doors. He kicked them open, ran inside, and slowed. The space inside was dark, but the sound and air suggested a large space, and a certain flatulent component indicated some kind of stable. There was some light, though, from a fire. Rincewind trotted towards it and saw that it was under a huge cauldron, man-sized, full of boiling rice. And now that his eyes were accustomed to the gloom, he realised that there were shapes lying on slabs along both walls of an enormous room. They were snoring gently. They were, in fact, people. They might even have been humans, or at least had humans in their ancestry before someone, hundreds of years ago, had said, "Let's see how big and fat we can breed people. Let's try for really big bastards." Each giant frame was dressed in what looked like a nappy to Rincewind's eyes, and was dozing happily alongside a bowl holding enough rice to explode 20 people, just in case it woke up in the night and felt like a light snack. A couple of his pursuers appeared in the doorway and stopped. Then they advanced, but very cautiously, carefully watching the gently moving mounds. "Oi, oi, oi!" shouted Rincewind. The men stopped and stared at him. "Wakey, wakey, let's see the rising suns." He grabbed a mighty ladle and banged it on the rice cauldron. "Up you get, hands off, whatever you can find, and on with socks." The sleepers stirred. The room shook as 40 tree trunk legs swung off the slabs. Flesh rearranged itself so that in the gloom, Rincewind appeared to be being watched by 20 small pyramids. "Those men," said Rincewind, pointing desperately at his pursuers, who were slowly backing away, "those men have a pork sandwich."
"Who?"
"With mustard."
"Who?"
20 very small heads turned. A total of 80 specialized neurons fired into life, and the floor shook. The wrestlers started to move hopefully towards the men in a slow but deliberate run designed to be halted only by collision with another wrestler or a continent. Rincewind dashed for the far door and burst through it. A couple of men were sitting in a small room drinking tea and playing shibo, watched by a third.
"The wrestlers are restless," he shouted. "I think you've got a stampede going on."
A man threw down his shibo tiles.
"Blast! And it's been at least an hour since they were fed."
The men grabbed various nets and prods and items of protective clothing, leaving Rincewind alone. There was another door. He sashayed through it. He'd never essayed a sachet before, but he reckoned he was due a sachet for quick thinking. There was another passage. He ran down it, on the basis that absence of pursuit is no reason to stop running. Lord Hong was folding paper. He was an expert at it because when he did it, he gave it his full attention. Lord Hong had a mind like a knife, although possibly a knife with a curved blade. The door slid aside. A guard, red in the face from running, threw himself on the floor.
"Oh, Lord Hong, who is exalted."
"Yes, indeed,"
said Lord Hong distantly, essaying a taxing crease.
"What has gone wrong this time?"
"My lord?"
"I asked you what has gone wrong."
We killed the Emperor as directed."
"By whom?"
My lord, you commanded it."
"Did I?"
said Lord Hong, folding the paper lengthwise. The guard shut his eyes. He had a vision, a very short vision, of the future. There was a spike in it. He carried on.
"But the prisoners can't be found anywhere, Lord. We heard someone approach and then, well, we saw two people, Lord. We're chasing them, but the others have vanished."
"No slogans? No revolutionary posters?
No culprits?" "No, Lord."
I see. Remain here.
Lord Hong's hands continued with the folding as he looked at the room's other occupant.
You have something to say to Fire Herb?
He said pleasantly. The revolutionary leader looked sheepish.
The Red Army has been quite expensive,
said Lord Hong.
The printing costs alone, and you cannot say I have not helped you. We unlocked the doors and killed the guards and gave your wretched people swords and a map, did we not? And now I can hardly claim that they killed the Emperor, may he stay dead for 10,000 years, when there is no sign of them. People will ask too many questions. I can hardly kill everyone, and we appear to have some barbarians in the building, too.
Something must have gone wrong, my lord.
Herb was hypnotized by the moving hands as they caressed that paper.
What a pity. I do not like it when things go wrong. God, redeem your miserable self, take him away. I will have to try a different plan.
My lord?
Yes, to Fire Herb. When it was agreed that the Red Army should be turned over to you, you did promise me indemnity.
Lord Hong smiled.
Oh, yes, I recall. I said, did I not, that I would neither say nor write any order for your death. And I must keep my word, otherwise what am I?
He folded the last crease and opened his hands, putting the little paper decoration on the lacquered table beside him. Herb and the guard stared at it.
Guard, take him away,
said Lord Hong. It was a marvellously constructed paper figure of a man, but there didn't seem to have been enough paper for a head. The immediate court turned out to be about 80 men, women and eunuchs in various states of sleeplessness. They were astonished at what sat on the throne. The horde were quite astonished at the court.
"Who were all of them vinegar-faced old baggages at the front?"
whispered Cohen, who was idly tossing a throwing knife into the air and catching it again.
"I wouldn't even set fire to them."
"They're the wives of the former emperors,"
hissed six beneficent winds.
"We don't have to marry them, do we?"
"I don't think so."
"Why are their feet so small?"
said Cohen.
"I like to see big feet on a woman."
Six beneficent winds told him. Cohen's expression hardened.
"I'm learning a lot about civilization, I am," he said. "Long fingernails, crippled feet, and servants running around without their family jewels.
Huh! What is going on here, pray?"
said a middle-aged man.
"Who are you? Who are these old eunuchs?"
"Who are you?" said Cohen. He drew his sword. "I need to know so's it can be put on your gravestone."
"I wonder if I might effect some introductions at this point,"
said Mr. Savaloy. He stepped forward.
"This," he said, "is Genghis Cohen,
put it away, Genghis,
who is technically a barbarian, and this is his horde. They have overrun your city, and you are..." "Barbarian invaders," said the man haughtily, ignoring him. "Barbarian invaders come in their thousands, big screaming men on little horses." "I told you," said Truckle, "but would anyone listen? And there is fire, terror, rapine, looting and blood in the streets."
"We haven't had breakfast yet," said Cohen, tossing his knife into the air again.
"Huh, I would rather die than submit to such as you."
Cohen shrugged.
"Why didn't you say so earlier?"
"Oops,"
said Six Beneficent Winds. It was a very accurate throw.
"Who was he anyway?"
said Cohen, as the body folded up. "Anyone know who he was?"
Genghis,
said Mr. Savaloy. I've kept meaning to tell you, when people say they'd rather die, they don't really mean they'd rather die.
Not always."
"Why'd they say it, then?"
"It's the done thing."
"Ah, is this civilization again?"
I'm afraid so.
Let's settle this once and for all, then, shall we? Said Cohen. He stood up. Hands up, those who'd rather die than have me as emperor.
Anyone? Said Mr. Savaloy.
Rincewind trotted along another passage. Was there no outside to this place? Several times he thought he'd found an exit, but it led only to a courtyard within the huge building, filled with tinkling fountains and willow trees. And the place was waking up. There were running steps behind him. A voice shouted, "Hey!" He dived for the nearest door. The room beyond was full of steam. It roiled in great billowing clouds. He could dimly make out a figure toiling at the huge wheel, and the words "torture chamber" crossed his mind, until the smell of soap replaced them with the word "laundry." Rather wan but incredibly clean figures looked up from their vats and watched him with barely a hint of interest. They did not look like people in close touch with current events. He half ran, half sauntered between the bubbling cauldrons.
"Keep it up. Good man. That's it. Scrub, scrub, scrub. Let me see those ringers ringing. Well done. Is there another door out of here? Good bubbles there. Very good bubbles.
One of the laundry workers, who appeared to be in charge, gave him a suspicious glare and seemed to be about to say something. Rincewind dodged through a courtyard criss-crossed with washing lines and stopped, panting, with his back to a wall. Although it was against his general principles, it was perhaps time to stop and think. People were chasing him. That is to say, they were chasing a running figure in a faded red robe and a very charred pointy hat. It took a great effort for Rincewind to come to terms with the idea, but it was just possible that if he was wearing something else, he might not be chased. On the line in front of him, shirts and trousers flapped in the breeze. Their construction was to tailoring in the same way that wood chopping is to carpentry. Someone had mastered the art of the tube and left it at that. They looked just like the clothes nearly everyone wore in Hung Hung. The palace was almost a city in its own right, said the voice of reason. It must be full of people on all sorts of errands, it added. It would mean taking off our hat, it added. Rincewind hesitated. It would be hard for a non-wizard to grasp the enormity of the suggestion. A wizard would sooner go without his robe and trousers than forego his hat. Without his hat, people might think he was an ordinary person. There was shouting in the distance. The voice of reason could see that if it wasn't careful, it was going to end up as dead as the rest of Rincewind, and added sarcastically, "All right, keep the wretched hat. Our damned hat is why we're in this mess in the first place. Perhaps you think you're going to have a head left to wear it on." Rincewind's hands, also aware that times were going to be extremely interesting and very short unless they took matters into themselves, reached out slowly and removed a pair of pants and a shirt and rammed them inside his robe. The door burst open. There were still guards behind him, and a couple of the Tsimo herders had joined in the chase. One of them waved a prod in Rincewind's direction. He plunged towards an archway and out into the garden. It had a little pagoda, it had willow trees, and a pretty lady on a bridge feeding the birds, and a man painting a plate. Cohen rubbed his hands together.
"No one? Good. That's all sorted, then."
A small man at the front of the crowd made a great play of keeping his hands to himself, but said,
"Excuse me, but what would happen in the hypothetical situation of us calling the guards and denouncing you?"
"We'd kill you all before they were halfway through the door," said Cohen, matter-of-factly.
"Any more questions?" he added, to a chorus of gasps.
The Emperor, that is to say, the last Emperor, had some very special guards.
There was a tinkling sound. Something small and multi-pointed rolled down the steps and spun round on the floor. It was a throwing star.
"Met them," said Boy Willie. "Fine, fine," said the little man. "That all seems in order. 10,000 years to the Emperor."
The shout was taken up, a little raggedly.
"What's your name, young man?" said Mr. Savaloy.
"Four Bighorns, my lord."
"Very good, very good. I can see that you will go a long way. What is your job?"
"I am Grand Assistant to the Lord Chamberlain, my lord."
"Which one of you is the Lord Chamberlain?"
Four Bighorns pointed to the man who had preferred to die.
"There we are, you see," said Mr. Savaloy. "Promotion comes fast to adaptable people, Lord Chamberlain. And now the Emperor will breakfast."
"And what is his pleasure?"
said the new Lord Chamberlain, endeavouring to look bright and adaptable. "All sorts of things, but right now, big lumps of meat and lots of beer. You will find the Emperor very easy to cater for." Mr. Savaloy smiled the knowing little smile he sometimes smiled when he knew he was the only one seeing the joke. "The Emperor doesn't favour what he calls fiddly foreign muck full of eyeballs and such like, and much prefers simple, wholesome food like sausages, which are made of miscellaneous animal organs minced up in a length of intestine. But if you want to please him, just keep up the big lumps of meat. Isn't that so, my lord?" Cohen had been gazing at the assembled courtiers. When you've survived for 90 years all the attacks that can be thrown at you by men, women, trolls, dwarfs, giants, green things with lots of legs, and on one occasion an enraged lobster, you can learn a lot by looking at faces. "Eh?" said Cohen. "Oh, yep, right enough. Big lumps. Here, Mr. Taxman, what do these people do all day?"
"What would you like them to do?"
"I'd like them to bucker off."
"Sorry, my lord?"
Complicated pictogram," said Mr. Savaloy. The new Lord Chamberlain looked a little startled.
"What? Here?"
"It's a figure of speech, lad. He just means he wants everyone to go away quickly."
The court scurried out. A sufficiently complicated pictogram is worth 1,000 words. After the stampede, the artist Three Solid Frogs got to his feet, retrieved his brush from his nostril, pulled his easel out of a tree, and tried to think placid thoughts. The garden was not what it had been. The willow tree was bent. The pagoda had been demolished by an out-of-control wrestler who had eaten the roof. The doves had flown, the little bridge had been broken, his model, the concubine Jade Fan, had run off crying after she'd managed to scramble out of the ornamental pond, and someone had stolen his straw hat. Three Solid Frogs adjusted what remained of his dress and endeavoured to compose himself. The plate with his sketch on had been smashed, of course. He pulled another one out of his bag and reached for his palette. There was a huge footprint in the middle of it. He wanted to cry. He'd had such a good feeling about this picture. He just knew it would be one that people would remember for a long time. And the colours, did anyone understand how much vermilion cost these days? He pulled himself together. So there was only blue left. Well, he'd show them. He tried to ignore the devastation in front of him and concentrated on the picture in his mind.
"Let me see now," he thought. "Jade Fan being pursued over a bridge by a man waving his arms and screaming, 'Get out of the way!' Followed by a man with prod, 3 guards, 5 laundrymen and a wrestler unable to stop."
He had to simplify it a bit, of course. The pursuers rounded a corner, except for the wrestler, who wasn't built for such a difficult manoeuvre.
"Where did he go?"
They were in a courtyard. There were pigsties on one side and middens on the other. And in the middle of the courtyard, a pointy hat. One of the guards reached out and grabbed a colleague's arm before the man stepped forward.
"Steady now," he said. "It's just a hat. So where's the rest of him? He couldn't have just disappeared into..."
They backed away.
"You heard about him too? They said he blew a hole in the wall just by waving his hands."
"That's nothing. I heard he appeared on an invisible dragon up in the mountains."
"What should we tell Lord Hong?"
"I don't want to be blown to pieces."
"I don't want to tell Lord Hong we lost him. We're in enough trouble already, and I've only just paid for this helmet."
"Well, we could take the hat. That'd be evidence."
"Right. You pick it up."
"Me? You pick it up.
It might be surrounded by terrible spells."
"Oh, really? So it's all right for me to touch it? Thank you. Get one of them to pick it up."
The laundrymen backed away, the Hung-Hung-Yi's habit of obedience evaporating like morning dew. The soldiers weren't the only ones to have heard rumours.
"Not us. Got a rush order for socks."
The guard turned. A peasant was stumbling out of one of the pigsties carrying a sack, his face covered in a big straw hat.
"Hey, you!"
The man dropped to his knees and banged his head on the ground.
Don't kill me.
The guards exchanged a glance.
We ain't gonna kill you, said one of them. We just want you to try and pick up that hat over there.
What hat, oh mighty warrior?
That hat there, right now.
The man crawled crabwise across the cobbles.
This hat, oh great lord?
Yes.
The man's fingers crept over the stones and prodded the hat's ragged brim. Then he screamed.
Your wife is a big hippo. My face is melting. My face is melting.
Rincewind waited until the sounds of fleeing sandals had quite faded. Then he stood up, dusted off his hat, and put it in the sack. That had gone a lot better than he'd expected. So there was another valuable thing to know about the Empire. No one looked at peasants. It must be the clothes and the hat. No one but the common people dressed like that, so anyone dressed like that must be a common person. It was the advertising principle of a wizard's hat, but in reverse. You were careful and polite around people in a pointy hat in case they took a very physical offence. Whereas someone in a big straw hat was a suitable target for,
hey, you,
and a... It was at exactly this point that someone behind him shouted, hey, you, and hit Rincewind across the shoulders with a stick. The irate face of a servant appeared in front of him. The man waved a finger in front of Rincewind's nose.
You are late. You are a bad man. Get inside right now.
The stick hit Rincewind again. The servant pointed at a distant doorway.
Insolence. Shame. Go to work.
Rincewind's brain prepared the words, oh, so we think we're clever sand just because we've got a big stick, do we? Well, I happen to be a great wizard, and you know what you can do with your big stick. Somewhere between the brain and his mouth, they became,
yes, sir, right away.
The horde were left alone.
Well, gentlemen, we did it, said Mr. Savaloy eventually. You have the world on a plate.
All the treasure we want, said Truckle.
That's right.
Let's not hang around then, said Truckle. Let's get some sacks.
There's no point, said Mr. Savaloy. You'd only be stealing from yourselves. This is an empire. You don't just shove it in a bag and divvy it up at the next campfire.
How about the ravishing?
Mr. Savaloy sighed.
There are, I understand, 300 concubines in the Imperial Harem. I'm sure they will be very pleased to see you, although matters will be improved if you take your boots off.
The old men wore the puzzled look such as might be worn by fish trying to understand the concept of the bicycle.
We ought to take just small stuff, said Boy Willie at last. Rubies and emeralds for preference.
And chuck a match on the place as we go out, said Vincent. These paper walls and all this lacquered wood should go up a treat.
No, 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 said Mr. Savaloy. The vases in this room alone are priceless.
Nah,
too big to carry, can't get them on a horse.
But I've shown you civilization, said Mr. Savaloy.
Yeah, it's all right to visit. Ain't that so, Cohen?
Cohen was hunched down in the throne, glaring at the far wall.
What's that?
I'm saying we take everything we can carry and head off back home, right?
Home? Yeah.
That was the plan, yeah?
Cohen didn't look at Mr. Savaloy's face.
Yeah. The plan, he said.
It's a good plan, said Truckle. It's a great idea. You move in as boss, fine. Great scam, saves trouble. None of that fiddling with locks and things. So we'll all be off home, okay? With all the treasure we can carry.
What for? Said Cohen.
What for? It's treasure.
Cohen seemed to reach a decision.
What did you spend your last haul on, Truckle?
You said you got 3 sacks of gold and gems from that haunted castle. Truckle looked puzzled, as if Cohen had asked what purple smelled like.
Spend it on? I dunno. You know how it is. What's it matter what you spend it on? It's loot. Anyway, what do you spend yours on?
Cohen sighed. Truckle gaped at him.
You're not thinking of really staying here.
He glared at Mr. Savaloy.
Have you two been cooking up something?
Cohen drummed his fingers on the arm of the throne.
You said go home, he said. Where to?
Well, wherever.
And Hamish there?
What? What?
I mean, he's 105, right? Time to settle down, maybe?
What?
Settle down?
Said Truckle. You tried it once. Stole a farm and said you was going to raise pigs. Gave it up after, what was it, 3 hours?
What's he saying? What's he saying?
He said it's time you settled down, Hamish. Bugger that!